Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha. Welcome to White Wellness. Today is March 18th, 2021, broadcasting out of New York for the American National Radio Network. That song right there was Alice in Chains with Man in the Box way back in 1990. Hard to believe that was 30 years ago. So for today's broadcast, I want to do my part two version of the gastrointestinal mind control show. I did this show about a month ago or so, where we talked about a lot of just pogroms that are going on there via the gut and good things to eat to combat those pogroms. And then it got me to thinking that these people who are willingly getting the OIDAI vaccination, are these people being controlled by their gut? And I'm thinking, yeah, they probably are. They're probably just the people who buy whatever they have in the store, like the regular stuff. And I mean, the food supply has been something that has been tampered with for a very long time. That's one of the ways that they control people. So I'm thinking there's definitely a correlation between people's guts being like totally messed up and them wanting to get the Oyed AI vaccination. Of course, you'd have to have a messed up gut in the first place to believe the stuff on the Jews media. So very important topic for today's broadcast, something that can help everybody out. And oftentimes the advice that they give in the mainstream or the mainstream alternative health movements in regards to gut health are actually not so good for our health. No surprise there. They always lead you somewhere and then just drop you off a cliff or just lead you down a road of snares. So 1/5 of doctor visits in this country are actually for digestive issues. Poor gut health has been called an epidemic caused by poor diet and lifestyle. And yeah, those are definitely probably the two things that are causing a lot of gut issues, as well as stress, which I guess would be because of a poor diet and lifestyle. Recent science has shown that gut health is far more important than once thought. Well, of course, they wouldn't want you to think that your gut health was important. It's really so much important. I mean, all health of the whole body is important, but oftentimes the gut is, you know, the second brain. I mean, right now, I think they're just acknowledging that in what they call functional medicine, but there's definitely merit to that. It's not only has an impact on diseases like IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or Crohn's disease, but can also lead to diabetes. And of course, like I've talked to you about on other broadcasts, we want to have a healthy gut, which will help us have a healthy metabolism, healthy bowel movements, healthy appetite, healthy sleep, healthy hormones, all of this stuff. The whole body works on a circuit. So if you have a healthier gut, it can make you less likely for things like diabetes, Alzheimer's, and many other autoimmune diseases. All of these diseases, no matter how many fundraisers, how many charities, how many events, how many whatever, they keep on seeming like they're growing out of control. And I think almost when people put all their energy into, you know, walking for the cure or doing something foolish, like eating Yoplait yogurt, they put all their focus on that. And then everything else with the problem is basically metastasizing and growing. They don't pay attention to that because they're so focused on the fundraising. It's like a fracturing of the mind. This is a lot how this Oyed AI or all these psyops work, is they fracture people and tell you two separate things, both that basically contradict one another. And then after time, the person is just so stunned, they don't know what to believe. So when the gut is compromised or compromised, our general health, including our immune system or shitstem for some people, is also compromised. So there we go. Of course, anyone who was foolish enough to get this Oyed AI vaccination is most definitely dealing with some gut issues. Gut health also affects our energy levels, concentration, and mental clarity. So if they had the gut issues in the first place to make them want to get this vaccination, and then now they're probably addled with more gut issues after they got this. But as you can see, gut issues are very prevalent. They keep on growing just like all the other issues. Whenever I read these quote health magazines, I always see these stories. I always see all these adverts in there for all these judicial farmers in a supposed, you know, health magazine. And one that I see over and over and over is for psoriasis, I think, and IBS or Crohn's. So these, of course, are problems of the gut, right? Even the stuff that comes on the outside of the skin is a problem of the gut. So this is really foundational and fundamental to focus on this type of health. And then other health usually tends to improve. But it's always important to think about when you're eating food or doing anything that it's for the entire system. It's not just for one thing. It's for that thing, but it's also for the entire system. So here is a little bit about the bacteria of the gut and how that can make you basically a more eugenic human, stronger, fitter, and happier. And some of the information in this article was correct. Others of it was incorrect, so I had to correct it along the way. Of course, this just comes from a mainstream source, so they're trying to promote lots of dry foods and lots of vegetation and foliage, which oftentimes isn't good for people if they have or had gut issues. If you just look at a cookbook from really just 60 years ago, not that long ago when you really think about it, you'll see that people didn't have this obsession with foliage as early back as the 60s. Even in the 70s, there wasn't too much of that, at least not in the early 70s. And then it started to trickle in a lot more with the hippie whole PSYOP happening, I guess about a decade before. But if you look back just really, what is that, 60 years ago, the 60s, you will see that they don't have that in these older cookbooks. They're more focused on animal foods and using certain vegetables in more of a way that makes them digestible, but not eating a lot of raw foliage, not a lot of nuts and seeds. Oftentimes these things can be irritating, especially for other people more than others. If anyone's dealing with any type of bowel inflammation, those types of foods will be more deleterious. So a little bit about bacteria, and it's so crazy to me. This is a good example of cognitive dissonance, how people are told, even in the mainstream, lamestream media, eat more sauerkraut, you know, eat more of all these types of things to get good bugs for your stomach, right? We're always told about, quote, good bugs. You know, there's always that differentiation between good and bad. That's part of it. And then they tell you, oh, there's this killer virus wafting through the air. And then people fear that, but they believe in like the good bugs theory. So that's an example of cognitive dissonance. Okay, so think about, this is a think about seven unexpected ways to a well-nourished gut to make you feel stronger, fitter, and happier, essentially eugenic. And now would be the time to strive more for eugenics, especially since we're seeing a dysgenia occur on a widespread scale with people damaging their immune system, shitstem, with the Oyede eye vaccination. Think about the last delicious thing you ate. Chances are, no matter how enjoyable the meal, once it found its way over your teeth and past the gums, you pretty much forgot about it. And once it's in your belly, it's out of sight, out of mind. Well, for some people, not for everybody. Some people are more tuned in and conscious to when they're eating and how they're eating. But what happens to the meal in the next 24 to 72 hours or so will have an enormous impact on your health. And that is definitely true. That's when the smooth muscles push food bits through 30 feet of living drain pipe as acids and enzymes melt these particles into sludge, whilst a bacchanalia of microbes convert them into chemicals that power your brain, muscles, and immune system. So we can see already how important it is to digest food well and to eat the right food to digest food well. Subtle changes in gut health can have a powerful effect on how you look and feel. Research has linked dysbiosis, an imbalance of gut bacteria, to more than 70 chronic diseases. Fortunately, the solution to almost any gut problem is simple. Excuse me. They're saying to build your meals. This is where I disagree with this. To build your meals around fiber-rich foods. And they're saying fruit, veg, beans, seeds, nuts, and whole grains. Well, I don't think that's necessarily the soundest advice because a lot of those foods are very dry. They're really not fresh foods. And some of them have ingredients that could be irritating. Also, have to take into consideration that a lot of people who eat these foods don't necessarily know how to prepare them properly to make them less irritating. Not to say these foods are evil or anything like that, but if you build your meals around a lot of dry, technically hard to break down foods, you're not going to have the smoothest digestion. So the best thing to do is to eat certain fruits, depending on how they work for you. You have to figure that out for yourself. Some people don't do well with the seeded ones, like raspberries and stuff like that. They do better with things that have the pit in the middle. And vegetables, those oftentimes are best cooked, sometimes avoided for some people. It really depends. Some people can eat a salad with no problem. You have to ebb and flow with your own body and figure these things out. Beans, of course, are best very, very well cooked, soaked, or sprouted, but not eaten in an intense manner. Same things with nuts and seeds, best to minimize, but have them soaked or sprouted if possible. And whole grains are best to kept minimized, but properly prepared, like soaked oatmeal, properly prepared corn tortillas, sourdough bread, things like that. Our ancestors did eat some of these foods once they became agrarian, but they didn't eat them when they were improperly prepared. They ate them properly prepared, and they certainly didn't see these foods as the most nutritious foods, and they were just kind of supplemental foods, if you will. And you'll notice that even if you go back to a cookbook in the 1960s, you'll see how people cooked. And of course, people looked a lot better back in those days. And that was before the whole gym culture. That was before the whole plant-based pogrom. This was before the whole weight loss culture really took off. I mean, yeah, there was a little bit of that already, but it was really before a lot of this toxic diet culture, and most people kept trim rather easily and naturally. Okay, so the best foods that you would want to eat to kind of, you know, make the gut digest very easily would be not the foods that they're mentioning in this article. Well, they don't like to tell us the truth, because if they told us the truth, we wouldn't have to buy their stuff, right? So this is all part of the plan. They give you some information that's correct, and then they peddle you what to do to get to that solution using the wrong, message or ingredient or things. So what are some foods that are easy to digest? Some of those foods could be fruit, depending on what fruits work for you. Maple syrup is oftentimes easy for people to digest. Honey, milk, especially raw, aged cheese or raw cheese, well-cooked root vegetables, beets, carrots, rutabaga, turnips, parsnips, things like that. And those are kind of waning right now in the season, depending on where you are in the world. We're kind of coming more into April pretty soon, you know, fiddlehead ferns and green garlic and strawberries. We'll have more stuff like that than the roots. Other easy to digest foods include wild caught shellfish, pasture raised eggs, fresh juice, butter, ghee, which is clarified butter, bone broth or gelatin, grass fed wild game and red meats, organ meats, coconut products, oxtail or tendons. Those are very gelatinous aspects of ruminant animals. Shanks, also another good part. Of course, these things would most likely be cooked. And then some white fishes or white fish. These are all things that are easy to digest and low in PUFAs or polyunsaturated fats. So very different than what that article was telling us in regards to what to eat. And I've noticed with myself, by implicating more of these easy to digest foods into my life, not only are these foods delicious and easy to prepare, but they digest very nicely. And three things are typically needed for good digestion, besides consuming food in a stress-free environment and all the other things that would make for a properly digested meal. You really want to make sure you have enough minerals in your diet, that you have enough fat, saturated fat, preferably raw, and that you have enough bacteria. And if you're eating these nutrient-dense animal foods, you will be getting a good amount of minerals, and you will also be getting them from saturated fat, hopefully raw, and you'll also be getting bacteria from these foods if you eat them raw. So it's kind of a win-win when you see what you really need to digest, to have really good digestion. It's oftentimes the opposite of what the medical system shitstem tells us, but if it wasn't the opposite, how could they sell us all their stuff, right? So here's a bit more about digestion and the microbiome. These foods provide outstanding nutrition not only for you, but also your microbiome, which is a term for the massively diverse community of bacteria living and working within your digestive system. And, you know, I think that's part of a psyop, the whole idea that we have this incredibly diverse community of bacteria in us. I think it's about really having the right amount or the right balance, as opposed to it, oh yeah, it's brimming, it's a crazy amount, because you could eat things that don't have a strain that really works for you. Like when people take probiotics, for example, oftentimes they will have issues where they feel like shit. Well, they'll bloat or they'll get constipated, diarrhea, they'll break out, they'll get like moody and stuff. I don't believe a lot of these probiotics actually have strains that we need. Otherwise, they wouldn't be promoting them like crazy, because I've noticed myself when I've taken them, I've really noticed no benefit whatsoever from taking them. I think I was just wasting my money. And I think other people have noticed the same thing too. I mean, the best way to get probiotics is to eat raw animal food. And if you don't want to do that, you can do, you know, vegetable pickles and stuff like that. I just don't really find those things very pleasant anymore. I used to like sauerkraut a lot more. But the bottom of the story, or the bottom line, is that we may not need this intensely diverse community of bacteria in us, right? We may need just the right amount and the right mix. So I think that they're promoting this, so we'll load up on all these probiotics and all these sauerkrauts and all this crazy stuff, and we'll actually be in a worse stead. We could be taking in too much lactic acid, which is not good for storing glycogen in the liver. And it also can be mentally affecting us. And also, I think there's another layer of this PSYOP, where if they want us to always think, oh, we need all these bugs in our belly, we have to have all this, you know, amazing amount, this humongous, diverse, millions of bacteria, this could be like a PSYOP to get us to basically accept like immigration and stuff like that. Think of that, refugees coming into the country, coming into our countries, our white countries. That could be part of the PSYOP, where we think we have to have this diverse mix in our body, so we need this diverse mix in our country. I mean, the OIVs work very slickly, so it's highly possible that that is a possibility. So onward with this article. So they're saying here that we should take something called psyllium husk, which is a non-fermenting gel-forming fiber, if we can't use the bathroom. I don't think that that is good advice. You usually need to drink a shitload of liquid to even pass out this psyllium husk. It expands like a sponge inside of your intestines, but it can also stretch out your intestines too. Then you'll basically have loose intestinal tissue, which would be like a balloon that was blown up too much. That would definitely not be a good thing to take if someone needed to use the toilet or needed to, you know, expel feces. A better thing to do would be to eat more of those foods that I had just priorly mentioned. Maybe give yourself a stomach massage, take an Epsom salt bath, or you could take something called Cascara Sagrada, which is a herb that has some properties where it will speed up motility and it will get poop out of you. Because it's really not healthy to have poop inside you. You have all that waste material that needs to come out, and it's basically just lazing around in there. And then all those things that the body basically is looking to excrete, like, you know, mucus, bacteria, hormones, etc. You have all these waste products recirculating around or staying in your body. So it's really important to get poop out if you have poop stuck inside of you. Oftentimes in Western medicine, they recognize constipation only if you've gone, not gone like in 3 days or something. You just have to know, I guess, yourself where that, you know, that place is for you, where you need to go enough. But most people are probably pretty backed up, especially if they're eating a lot of these foods that the OIVE system shitstem has been promoting to us for quite some time now. Okay, so here are some benefits of having a properly bacterially balanced gut. So number one is that you can experience they're saying weight loss. I would say weight management. I don't like to use a lot of the terms that they use anyway. They always promote it in a way that it's like you'll get there as opposed to you'll stay there. So I like to present it in more of a present day. So let's say you'll be able to keep your weight at a stable, healthy area or place with a proper bacterial balance. Different types of gut bacteria living inside thin and overweight people is a thing. One example, when researchers in Italy assigned 20 obese women with the average age of 79, they're saying, to a low-sugar Mediterranean diet, they saw a spike in bacteria associated with weight loss and a drop in bacteria related to obesity. Not surprisingly, the women lost an average of 2.7% of their body weight in 15 days. And is the low-sugar Mediterranean diet one of the greatest diets out there? No, I don't think it is. Is it one of the worst? No. It does emphasize some foods that are healthy, but I think it also kind of leaves out some that would be like more nutrient-dense animal foods, and it kind of goes a little crazy with some of the foods that may be hard to digest, but it does feature things like certain vegetables that are good. I think certain cheeses, certain fishes. So it does have certain merit, and it's probably a hell of a lot better than most people's diets. So oftentimes, even on a diet that isn't the most amazing diet, people can still get into more of a, you know, the sweet spot zone for their, you know, intestinal bacterial balance. And of course, you don't want to have bacteria in the small intestine. You want to have it in the large intestine. The small intestine, if you have any type of stuff growing in there, that would be what they call SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth. So you do want some of these bugs in your body. You just don't want them in the wrong place. And when they're promoting all these probiotics, all these fermented foods with like all these strains in them, which are also like probably like, you know, tranny milk yogurts, like coconut milk yogurt or whatever, these are really not the type of things that we want to be putting into our body. They're products, essentially, with a gimmick. Okay, so number two, being strong, being fit. If your gut lining becomes inflamed from an imbalanced microbiome, it becomes porous, and that's known as leaky gut. That's the colloquial, I think the scientific term is intestinal permeability. Bacteria that are supposed to remain locked inside your intestine, your large intestine, can enter the bloodstream and kick up inflammation into your gut lining and other body tissues, undermining your muscular strength. And that's how they say joint issues actually occur. It's that all these bugs will basically go into the rest of the body, out of the bloodstream, and like eat up like joint tissues and stuff like that. When researchers at Wake Forest University put 288 people aged 60 to 79 through a battery of simple fitness tests that included standing up from a chair and walking 400 meters, they discovered a direct correlation between gut leakage and muscular weakness. Well, that kind of goes hand in hand with what people say about all these vegans being soy boys and, you know, having no muscles, no biceps. These guys probably have gut damage and brain damage from eating all those dry foods, all those irritating foods, all those hard foods, right? Number three, you'll think more sharply. So if you think more sharply, you'll be able to see more things that are going on in the world. Once in your bloodstream, microbes can be carried to your head. Well, looks like a lot of people are probably in that position right now with what they think about Oyed AI, right? Having the mental illness that is Oyed AI. Then the brain has to mount an inflammatory response. I remember when the body does something like creates an inflammatory response, it's doing it as a way to protect and help you, but it's because what you did prior to garner that response is the real issue. Over time, that all that inflammation of the microbes being carried to your head, actually, let's see. Yeah, they're making it seem like these microbes are going to kill you, but it would really just be, I think, from a bad balance of people eating the wrong food and inoculating themselves from the wrong strains. But of course, they're trying to make it seem like it's some, you know, brain-eating microbe. That's the underlying feeling I'm getting from this. So basically, the bottom line is that over time, if you have this, you know, shitty bacterial imbalance going on, that can increase your risk of things like dementia, which makes perfect and total sense because people who eat a lot of PUFAs, they have a lot of this bad bacteria, I think, from the PUFAs basically breaking down into these lipopolysaccharides. And there is, I think, a correlation with that, with people having like lots of endotoxin and then having all of these brain and cognitive issues, which we're seeing in younger and younger people these days, having this brain fog and just kind of making fun of it. Notice how people just make fun of like these ailments they're having that aren't normal. Like even these people who have gotten the Oyed AI vaccination and they're kind of LOLing and they're like, oh, you know, now I'm a mutant. Now I'll be speaking Chinese, LOL. Like they're just like cheering on their own demise. It's pretty gross. So they're basically saying that, you know, an unsavory bacterial balance and a shitty gut can produce chemicals that directly hinder your ability to think. There's more nervous tissue in the GI tract, the gastrointestinal tract, than anywhere else in the brain. So if you have basically a shitty balance going on in your body, that's going to make your brain feel foggy. So if you're eating shit, you're not breaking it down, you've got this inflamed intestinal tract, you've got holes in your gut, you're probably not going to be thinking very well. Number four, you'll sleep better. Recently, 474 people ages 18 to 94 filled out some sleep questionnaires. Then they submitted stool samples. Researchers found that participants with more microbiome diversity, they're telling us, and I don't believe that's true. I think it's with the best balance of it. I think this is a psyop into the article, slept more deeply than those with less. Another study showed that people with microbiome diversity, correction, the right balance, fall asleep faster and perform better cognitive tests, just as you'd expect from rested brains. So people who basically eat better, digest better, and poop better, sleep better. That makes sense. Number five, you'll ease belly woes. According to the Cleveland Clinic, some people may be helped by taking probiotics. I don't agree with that. I already said that earlier. I would suggest eating raw animal foods to get your bacterial balance and get natural probiotics. If that doesn't appeal to you, you can do stuff like some of the store-bought stuff that's pasteurized, like yogurts and stuff like that, kefirs. Kefir might not be appropriate for everybody because it's high in lactic acid. So some yogurts are too, unless they are Greek yogurt. You could also think about raw honey. Raw honey has enzymes in it. Or you could eat a small amount of fermented vegetables. You could make them yourselves or not. It really depends how that would break down for you. Some people don't do well breaking down stuff like cabbage, even if it is fermented. And if a lot of European recipes, if you look at them, older recipes, they would take sauerkraut after it would been fermented. So it was cabbage that basically went limp and it was sour. And then they would add that to a soup. Like a lot of Eastern Europe has a soup called borscht. They have it in Hungary. I'm partially Hungarian. And you will add a little bit of the sauerkraut to the soup. They do this in Poland and other areas too. So they're basically cooking it. So that basically gets rid of, I guess, the healthy, supposed healthy bacteria. I don't know. I just think oftentimes there are so many quicker and easier ways to do something as opposed to, you know, fiddling with probiotics, fiddling with some of these store-bought sauerkrauts that we don't know what they're putting into it. I mean, you could try those if you want, but I always think that getting the raw stuff from the real raw animal foods is the best way to go. They're saying that the right bacteria in the stomach, basically, not the probiotics, but having foods that are basically enzyme-rich and alive, help with things like diarrhea, constipation, inflammatory bowel dis-ease, irritable bowel syndrome, yeast infections, urinary tract infections, and even gum dis-ease. And of course, the health of the mouth is a reflection of the health of the digestive tract. In TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, they refer to the mouth as the flower of the digestive tract. So oftentimes people who have tooth problems have gut problems. And the right bacteria and the right foods can help. This is some antibiotic recommending usage, and I don't really get behind the usage of antibiotics. I know some people contend that they're useful to wipe out everything, especially if you have a dysbiosis situation going on, but I don't know. I don't really think they're the best thing to take because they can really wipe out everything. And according to some sources, once you've done it, you've permanently depleted 1% of your bacteria. I know people oftentimes will take them like candy or they grew up on them. Truth be told, the first time I ever took an antibiotic, I was 26 years old. I had strep throat. It was awful. I've never felt like that before. It was a very, very stressful time in my life. And I remember trying to swallow water and even that was painful. But I've only taken, actually in 40 years, I've only taken antibiotics 4 times. I'm very, very conservative with stuff like that. I always think it's best to be. Number 6, in regards to having a healthy gut and having a healthy bacterial balance, you will have less colds. And of course, a cold is a detox. This article is telling us we will catch fewer colds. It is impossible to catch a cold because it's impossible to catch a detox. 2/3 of the body's immune cells live in and around the gut, and they take cues from the microbiome. As the gut microbes change with age, some of that immune education starts to fall off. Changes in the microbiome offer a partial explanation for why older people are more susceptible to basically, they're saying colds and virus detoxes. They're saying infections, but detox. Well, usually the older you are, the more toxic you are, especially if you believe in allopathy and you've been tethered to the system. Usually they take more medications. Usually they have teeth problems. Oftentimes they're stuck eating soft food, which is very low in nutrition, so they're probably malnourished. But of course, no, it's got nothing to do with that. It's aging. Basically, what aging is this is what the socially acceptable term for degeneration is. That's technically what it is. Aging is degeneration. Number seven, you'll just plain feel better. After studying the microbiomes of more than 2,100 people, researchers in Belgium and the Netherlands found that symptoms of depression were highest among people with depleted strains of two key bacteria, Dialister and Corprococcus. Well, the corpora one is probably a fecal bacteria because coprophagia is a fetish for feces eating. So that's another whole psyop about how they've basically created this phobia of feces in the Jews media, as well as laughing at toilet humor when we actually need certain of these bacteria like E. coli to be healthy. That would be another topic for another show. When researchers assign moderately to severe depressed people to 12 weeks of either counseling or eating a Mediterranean diet, those in the diet group were four times more likely to see a significant emotional improvement. Well, of course, and regular medicine like allopathy, psychiatry is just now, after all these years of, you know, maiming people iatrogenically with, you know, pill after pill, currently, they're just now getting used to the idea of exploring that maybe there's a connection between diet and mental illness. Just now, they're getting around to that type of topic. Pretty mind-boggling. But of course, there's no profit in the things that actually work, right? So a little bit there on gut issues and gut bacteria and what type of stuff would be good to be eating. So now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about what happens when digestion goes wrong. And we kind of alluded to that a little bit by me going through some of the terms that the allopathic system utilizes when someone has basically a lack of homeostasis in the gut. So what actually happens from a breakdown perspective when your digestion goes wrong? And oftentimes people can feel on the outside that something doesn't feel good, like maybe they'll feel bloated or they'll feel acid reflux or they'll feel some type of indigestion, but do they actually know what goes on when this all happens? So let's break that down. What happens when your digestion goes wrong? A lot of things tend to wrong when digestion malfunctions, including but not limited to bloat and constipation, acid reflux, diarrhea, abdominal cramping, etc. And those are sometimes some of the more mild, if you will, symptoms. When people have a very advanced gut ailment, it goes way beyond that. Nearly every digestive symptom starts with the inability to break down food efficiently in the stomach. When the body is stressed, the nervous system tells the thyroid to down-regulate. This results in decreased production of HCl, stomach acid, and digestive enzymes. So there we see the cycle, right? You can't break down the food. That stresses out the body. Then the nervous system tells the thyroid to down-regulate, right? And this results in a low stomach acid and low digestive enzymes, meaning it's going to be harder to digest the food. So already they can't break down the food, and then the body gets stressed out and makes it harder for them to break down the food. Low stomach acid and enzyme production results in impartially digested food. And of course, if anyone's ever seen food come out the other end, they can attest for this being true. Poorly digested food in the stomach is then sent to the small intestine where it is, quote, fermented by bacteria, leading to bacterial overgrowth in the small intestines known as SIBO. We talked about that earlier. As bacteria ferment impartially broken down lipopolysaccharides or endotoxins. Actually, I missed a line. Sorry about that. As bacteria ferment impartially broken down food in the small intestine, they produce inflammatory metabolites known as lipopolysaccharides or gut endotoxins. These endotoxins cause inflammation and damage to the gut lining, leading to leaky gut or intestinal permeability. Once the gut becomes leaky, Food particles and endotoxin can enter the bloodstream and cause a host of stressful effects, triggering autoimmune and inflammatory reactions. From this point, a vicious cycle tends to set in. The inflammation from endotoxin causes an increased rise in the stress hormones cortisol, estrogen, and serotonin, which all further suppress thyroid function, which only further slows down digestion. So see how more and more it just gets progressively like a domino, right? Like that game Domino Rally back in the 90s, you'd press one and all the rest went cascading down. In fact, it is well established that hypothyroidism is associated with altered gastrointestinal motility. And yes, that is one of the symptoms of hypothyroidism, is slow motility, which is one of the dominant risk factors for the development of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO, bloat, constipation, IBS, and other gut issues. So it all comes cascading down and it all works together. The problems don't stop there either. Much more can go wrong when your digestive stops working right. So of course it takes time to get into this stead, right? And also on the other side, it takes time to get out of this as well. For example, 80% of your immune system lies behind your digestive tract in your lymph. It is protected by some 4 pounds of probiotic bacteria, which also have a large role in digestion and immunity, as well as hormone production, neurotransmitter production, nutrient transmutation, and much, much more. And isn't it sick how when someone has the big C, like breast cancer, for example, they will remove like all the lymph around someone's breasts and armpits. The lymph is, I mean, that's part of your immune system. 80% is in the lymph. I mean, oh, it's allopathy is mind-boggling. It's really just a Skeksis psychopathic cult. If your gut lining is damaged or your probiotic bacteria is compromised, and of course that's pretty common, those things often go hand in hand, this precious barrier becomes penetrated and all sorts of problems start. And it's very thin, this membrane too, about one cell thick. So this can happen if, you know, irritants are thrown in. One of the first things you might experience is food intolerances, even to foods you would otherwise digest. This is because as your gut becomes permeated, your immune system becomes overactive as it sees undigested food particles in your bloodstream. So let's say you used to do fine eating something and now it's bothering you. Well, it could be that food quality has gotten shittier, sure, but it's also because your body has been breaking down. Over time, if this is not fixed, the body becomes highly inflamed by this leaky gut situation. Something to know is that the human gut is very much alive. It houses 4 pounds of living organisms. See, all of us is alive, by the way. We're not dead. The Oyves want us to think that we're dead. They always tell us teeth are dead. I mean, we're alive. All parts of us are alive. Just wanted to throw that out there. To be exact, over 500 species of bacteria live in your digestive tract, which form a giant ecosystem. Its jobs are many, and it helps you to digest food, assimilate nutrients, regulate hormones, excrete toxins, and produce vitamins, and even produce immune cells, to keep your body healthy. If that microbiome is out of balance, meaning that there is more pathogens than there is probiotics, which basically means that's kind of more of a germ theory type of wording right there. Basically, if the balance is off, then a bacterial imbalance called gut dysbiosis is a result, and the cascade of digestive problems and dis-ease begins. You might experience things like bloating and cramping, gas, acne, several skin issues, allergies, sinus infections, or worse. However, the problems are not just physical. The gut is intimately tied to your brain and mood too. So you'll be, whatever affects your brain or your gut is going to affect your brain as well. The gut-brain connection is developed in the womb during embryogenesis. During this period, a collection of tissue referred to as the neural crest is produced and then divides into 2 parts during the fetal development. One part becomes the CNS, the central nervous system, and the other becomes the enteric nervous system. So our nervous system and both of them, the enteric and the central, basically come from the same tissue. You could say that the enteric nervous system is the brain in your gut. It has the job of producing major neurotransmitters like serotonin, glutamate, norepinephrine, and nitric oxide. When the intestines are compromised, they tend to overproduce these stress substances, leading to inflammation and IBD, irritable bowel disease. In the beginning stages, these, quote, minds develop simultaneously and independently of one another. Later in this development, the two nervous systems become intimately connected through a neural cable referred to as the vagus nerve, the longest of all the cranial nerves. The vagus nerve goes from the brain stem through the organs in the neck and the core and finally terminates in the abdomen. Through the stimulation of the vagus nerve, our second brain is stimulated. This is the gut-brain connection. If someone's had a vagotomy where that nerve is severed, their digestion's going to suffer very much from that. You've likely experienced this system for yourself. However, it is the reason you get butterflies in your stomach aches when you're nervous, why antidepressants can cause digestive problems and why digestive problems can make you feel depressed, why overeating makes you feel less stressed, why stress makes you want to eat more or not at all, why food intolerances and gut inflammation can cause you to become irritable, angry, or even cause cognitive disorders. And how many people do we know like this who are basically mentally ill, essentially because basically their gut is messed up and their brain's been hijacked? Perhaps the most important aspect of digestion is the health of your liver. Our gut has more to do than just digest food. It also rids the body of toxins produced through digestion and metabolism and any other form of toxicity. This is a job left up to the liver. In short, your liver filters everything you come in contact with 24/7. It or any part of your gut is not functioning properly, your body becomes backed up with toxins, and this causes massive inflammation and dis-ease. To put it more into perspective, the liver does the following things. It cleans your blood. It manufactures proteins and blood clotting agents. It manufactures cholesterol, stores glycogen, fats, and proteins, converts fat and proteins to carbohydrates and lactic acid to glucose, transfers galactose, milk sugar, into glucose, digests foods, produces digestive enzymes and bile, extracts ammonia from amino acids, converts ammonia to urea, stores the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, and K2, converts adipose fat into ketone bodies, neutralizes pharmaceuticals, alcohol, and all toxins, produces interferon, your body's natural germ killer. This, of course, is coming, like many articles, from that foolish, outdated germ perspective. So that probably just keeps the body in a good balance, essentially, and gets rid of anything that is not meant to be there. So as you can see, the liver and the gut work together in tandem. The whole body is on a circuit working together. This whole business of compartmentalized medicine, the way they have you, like, basically in the allopathy box of go here for your foot, go here for your back, that all is kind of to keep you in that box. Not to say they can't give you immediate help and treat symptoms, but it would be really nice to know more in regards to how the body could be regenerated so these problems wouldn't be happening in the first place, right? That's always nice to know. However, the buck stops there with allopathy because it's a business, and a business has to make money. If a business doesn't make money, it closes down, right? And of course, certain businesses not only like to make money, but also like to control people. And one of the easiest and worst ways that they control people is via their digestive tract, via their immune system or immune system for certain people. So that was just a little bit there of what happens when digestion goes wrong. Maybe it gave you more of an idea. You can just paint the picture in your head and imagine your stomach, imagine your liver, imagine your intestines, imagining all of this, kind of like the magic school bus if you're around that vintage of age to remember those books. There was one where they were writing inside the intestine, I think. Those books were a little on the oy vey, like multi-culti side, but sometimes some of the adventures they took were pretty interesting. But yeah, very important for us to comprehend and know exactly the cascade of events that occurs when we eat something that we cannot digest. And of course, digestion starts with eating things we can digest. Otherwise, what are we doing? We're going to deal with all those issues that I just went through. So another issue that often not coincides, I guess coincides. No, I guess coincides would be the right way to say. There's no need to put an oy vey spin on this, but another issue that often happens when people have this malfunctioning digestion, this mind function, this malfunctioning gastrointestinal system, is that they have issues with their blood sugar. Of course, we see this manifesting with things like obesity and diabetes and insulin resistance, what they call syndrome X, hypoglycemia. And we also see this in certain things like female diabetes, PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, etc. We see a lot of gut issues coinciding with blood sugar issues. And I think I talked a little bit about blood sugar in one of my other gastrointestinal shows as well, the first one. But today I wanted to talk about how to eat. How to eat so you know that you'll be keeping your blood sugar stable, and this will also help with eating foods that are easy to digest. And oftentimes people will ask me, oh, what am I supposed to eat? I don't know what to eat. Oftentimes that is pretty individual. It really depends what you digest and what works for you, what you find attractive and tasty. That's going to be different too. But regardless, here is a good skeleton to help you get an idea of how you can eat to balance your blood sugar so you don't get into that feeling where your blood sugar dips and you just feel like shit. Whether you run hypoglycemic or insulin resistant, which is hyper goes glycemic, and most people err towards one of them. Some people oscillate between both of them. Of course, it's more dangerous. So here are a few basic ways to support thyroid health by stabilizing blood sugar, which of course, this is helpful information for everybody out there because it's all about keeping the body in homeostasis. So eat a high quality protein breakfast. This, of course, is a great time to get in a good amount of protein. I like to get about 70 to 90 grams per a day. Men should get more than that. When you wake up in the morning, you have gone a long time without eating. Chances are your adrenal fight or flight hormones have been called into action, particularly if you woke up at 3 or 4 a.m. feeling anxious. You need to calm down your system by eating a breakfast of high quality proteins, saturated fats, and high quality, easy to digest carbohydrates. I realize eating breakfast is difficult when people have blood sugar issues. Chances are you could wake up with no appetite at all, perhaps even feeling nausea, and that's not normal or healthy. This is a side effect of your adrenal hormones, and that cup of coffee is only going to make the issue worse for some, or it should be consumed after you eat your meal. You must simply force yourself to eat some protein, even if it's a little bit. It will help dissipate your nausea in just 2 or 3 days. And this is true. I've seen this happen with people. Of stabilizing your blood sugar, you'll no longer wake up feeling nauseous. Chances are you'll sleep a lot better too. Supporting blood sugar issue is futile unless you eat breakfast. And this whole nonsense of taking black coffee and then just starting the day without fuel, this is tomfoolish. And of course, the system is promoting it. Supporting blood sugar issues is futile unless you eat breakfast. Of course it is. If you work out first thing in the morning, make sure you eat within 1 hour of waking up. And yes, that is sound advice. So number two, eat a small amount of protein every 2 or 3 hours. This is especially important when you're learning to stabilize your blood sugar. The name of the game is to keep your blood sugar stable and leave the adrenal glands out of the picture. Going for long stretches without eating when you have dysglycemia exacerbates your blood sugar issues, which exacerbates your thyroid problems. A boiled egg, cheese, or meat, other things can be added to the side like carrots and beets, or just a really good snack that features an easy to digest protein. And you will find as your blood sugar improves that you'll be able to go longer between snacks, but you never really want to go too long because then you can feel nauseous again and that can make it hard for you to eat. So you always want to eat on a schedule. And if you feel that you're getting that dip, like that 3 p.m. slump that some people refer to it as, if you're getting that dip, learn to read and intuit that signal and make sure you have like an egg and something else there just to pop a quick snack depending on where you are and how your schedule works for you. Find your carbohydrate tolerance and stick to it. This is going to be different for everybody. So of course, they're saying a high carbohydrate diet is the root of dysglycemia. That's part of the problem, but the real problem is eating all these polyunsaturated fats and all these heavy metals and all of these hard to digest foods. It's so many things, but that's not a good move to eat too many carbohydrates. Anyway, we don't want to do that with any of the macronutrients. This can also cause hormonal imbalances, eating an imbalanced diet, obviously, as well as poor digestion and a weakened immune system. This is why they promote it. How many grams of carbohydrates should you eat each day? I follow this simple rule. If you feel sleepy or crave sweets after you eat, you have eaten too many carbohydrates. And that would be a sign that your blood sugar is not in a stable zone. Some insulin resistance causes you to feel sleepy, even if you haven't eaten anything starchy or sweet. In this case, you need to work to reverse that, depending on how you choose to do that. What are carbohydrate-rich foods? And of course, that could be root vegetables, that could be fruits, that could be certain sweeteners like honey and such. That could also be properly cooked carbohydrates, grain carbohydrates. That could also be properly cooked beans for certain people. It really depends what works for you. If your gut is in shambles right now, you might want to lean back on the grains and the beans. Okay, let's see. Some of this is nonsense, so I'm going past it. Many symptoms of dysglycemia, such as poor sleep and irritability and energy crashes, start to diminish as you basically start to follow this type of plan and balance your blood sugar. Another tip, never eat high sugar foods without some fiber, fat, or protein. Well, of course, whenever you eat anything, you always want to have a little balance of the three macronutrients going on. That's important. And fiber would really depend. Some people do okay with a little bit of fiber from fruit and root vegetables. I'm not talking about psyllium and stuff like that or Metamucil or any acacia fiber. No, that's not food. And then some people do better with just avoiding it all because their gut is just really inflamed and anything that's going to be fibrous or abrasive is going to be far too much for them. Let's see. They're saying avoid all adrenal stimulants, and you can definitely get more of a hypoglycemic or a hyperglycemic feeling if you drink too much caffeine or if you have it on an empty stomach. Some people say that you should avoid it 100% if you are diabetic. It can definitely be abused by people. It's probably best to keep it in check. Eat a well-balanced diet consisting of high quality animal foods, high quality fruits, root vegetables, well-cooked vegetables, and certain, properly prepared beans and grains if those work for you. And also a good idea to eliminate food allergens and intolerances by eating food that would basically not be food, like stuff that has additives and things like that, stuff that it was grown in questionable or nefarious conditions. Oftentimes these additives and things can affect our gut health, for example. If you look at the back of the package, they'll have stuff about guar gum and xanthan gum and locust bean gum and carob gum. These things are really not good. These gums can irritate the digestive tract. They're best not eaten or to find a product that doesn't have them. And what else? Something else in food too, besides those gums. There's so many things, natural flavors. And these are sneaking into all like the supposed healthy or organic brands of stuff. But I would definitely be leery of buying foods with gums. And oftentimes a lot of these foods now have starches in them, like cornstarch, tapioca starch. These starches are very cooked and they're very hard to break down and they can induce a dysbiosis situation to the gut. So just something to think about. And also notice how they're sticking these things in so many foods because they want people to have dysbiosis and a fucked up gut because they're becoming easier to control, essentially. So what it really comes down to is eating easy to digest foods that are tasty, that are pretty simple foods, right? Like we went through that list earlier in the show. Simple foods. It isn't about getting completely complex on it. Like oftentimes you'll see these vegetableists or these vegans on YouTube who are making this massive concoction of food, you know, and throwing in all these spices and all these things. Simple food is easy to prepare, and it's simple, and it's tasty, and it's fresh, and it's good to easy to digest, and it will balance blood sugar and hormones. It doesn't have to be completely and totally complicated. They like to complicate stuff when a lot of stuff is actually a lot more simple than it's made out to be, which is ultimately unfortunate. So what else did I want to talk about for this broadcast? Let me just get a sip of liquid. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about high serotonin. And this definitely relates to the gut. And contrary to popular belief, they always tell us in allopathy that serotonin is this happy hormone. They even have these allopathic pills that are called SSRIs, which are supposed to raise serotonin. It's not a good deal at all. But there is something called the high serotonin personality. And I think we're seeing a lot of this nowadays, of course, as people degenerate. As we see a degeneration of the world around us, we see a degeneration of people's brains, their physique, many ways to discern that there is a degeneration stead going on. And I might snack a little bit during this broadcast too, because I'm getting a little munchy. I didn't eat a huge lunch. I actually got some raw lamb for the first time. I've never had raw lamb. I've had rare lamb many times, usually how I like it. But today I have raw lamb with butter, and I got some cilantro on top of it. So let's take a taste and see how it tastes. Let me get a little bit of butter on my finger. Very delicious. Yeah, it's good. Very good. This is raw butter too. Lamb is good. Lamb is one of those things that if it's not grown or produced the right way, it can be very, very gamey and not so pleasant. But this is pretty good. Very good. And this will be easy to digest. Very easy to digest. And I have a little bit of the cilantro just for flair. I like it. It's one of my favorite herbs or herbs. It's always good on everything. And we're getting a question in the chat from Midwest Whitey. Any thoughts on the mukbang videos on YouTube? I've always found them extremely weird. Yeah, I actually mentioned this on a show quite some time ago, going back probably over a year or so. And I remember first getting the thing on the side bar of showing someone do it. And sometimes it's with food that I guess is somewhat healthy or appetizing, but oftentimes it's people eating very, very unsavory, quote, food, or more like food in triple parentheses. Like, it's not really food. It's like them binging on Taco Bell, or it's just something gross like that. I think it's pretty gross, actually, the whole mukbang thing. Very gross, very Jewy, very type of like Idiocracy type of like vibe to it. I think it's a way to also promote obesity, promote gluttonism, things like that. And then it's kind of like the flip of all this stuff of people not eating, you know, restricting, only doing liquids or like living off of coffee or whatever. So, I mean, I think it's again that kind of like extreme thing, like how Zog always promotes extremes. They either show these obese, like orca-like women, or they show these women who were so lean, they might as well be men. They probably are men. Yeah, it's totally hedonistic. And not to say we shouldn't feel pleasure from our food and that we shouldn't enjoy our food and enjoy our lives and feel pleasure, certainly, but who needs to scarf down 10 pounds of Taco Bell? Jason is saying, most mukbang videos are disgusting and cruel to animals. They have channels of killing live animals and eating them alive too. That could be how it originated maybe in Korea, because oftentimes they're into that type of thing. What aspect is fucked, Midwest Whitey? I guess the whole aspect of the mukbang thing. Yeah, it's really gross. It's a gross trend, and these trends always catch on too. not a good thing, not a good thing at all, really. It's really just, it's degenerating. I mean, people who eat like that are degenerated enough to eat that much. Eating them alive is fucked. Yeah, it definitely is. Definitely is. Wild. What becomes trendy, right? Isn't it crazy how some of these things can have 1 million views or something like that, and then something that could actually uplift you and help you would have like maybe like, I don't know, 100 views. It's crazy. This meat is so easy to chew, too. And I'm not eating like a mukbang serving of it. I have the same plate I use every time I eat raw meat. It's this oval plate. It's got yellow flowers on it. And I use it to eat whenever I'm eating meat, raw meat. And I'm noticing, too, since I've been adding in more raw meat to my diet, I've noticed that I feel like my skin is softer. Not that it wasn't soft before, but I feel like it's getting much softer, like it's a real moisturizing effect. And I also feel that my sleep, not my sleep, I feel that my flexibility, I'm getting more flexible. I've always been naturally very flexible, but I feel like when I was eating more cooked meat, that was making me less flexible. So I'm just noticing all these differences. And I think also getting better digestion. Back to the topic at hand, this being a broadcast about digestion, because this food is alive, right? It has natural bacteria on it. So does the butter. And it's going to be easy to digest, this little bit of fat from the butter. So this is why you can see if someone goes out to eat, maybe they say, oh, that meat sat in my belly like a lead balloon. Well, yeah, they probably got it like super, super cooked. I mean, no one asked you to do that, right? Okay, so let's talk about the high serotonin personality. And if you've never had just raw meat chopped up with like a little bit of like raw butter on top, preferably if you can get it, I must say, it is something that is extremely tasty. It might be a new texture and new flavor for you to try something like this out, but it might grow on you, especially if you're already a sushi person. You might say, okay, this isn't too different from sushi. I've eaten tuna sushi before. This is like very tasty, very tastes like tuna a lot. This is healthier than tuna too, because tuna is high in highly unsaturated fatty acids, and we don't want to have too many of those in our body. Even though the system shits them, tells us it's heart healthy. Okay, one more piece, and then I'll start reading. Okay. So the high serotonin personality, and this article shows this guy who looks absolutely irate, like pointing his finger at someone screaming. So I think we could already get a little idea off the bat what the high serotonin personality is like. Serotonin is a complicated neurotransmitter that, contrary to other neurotransmitters, has an influence on everything in the body. It's currently believed in the allopathic system shitstem to aid in anxiety, depression, impatience, impulsiveness, anger, etc. One of the main reasons for this is that the metabolite of serotonin, 5-HIAA, is low in people with these symptoms. The research was thus based on an assumption that brain serotonin is low because 5-HIAA is low. However, a low 5-HIAA is actually a sign that very little serotonin is being broken down and that there's actually an excess of it in the brain. Very interesting. And of course, allopathy never seems to get it, right? There are mainly three ways that serotonin can become elevated in the brain. Firstly, through an increase in the synthesis via tryptophan hydroxylase 2, TPH2. Secondly, by reduced monoamine oxidase A function, MAOA, breaks down serotonin. And thirdly, by a decrease in SERT, serotonin transporter function. So you get a little bit of the science behind it right there. So when elevated TPH and low MAOA and SRT activity will lead to an elevated serotonin situation. This article is not to specifically discuss if serotonin is the good or bad guy and why, but I'm here to describe the personality trait of someone with high serotonin. Keep in mind that serotonin is rarely, if ever, elevated on its own, but most likely due in conjunction with other factors such as estrogen, cortisol, histamine, prostaglandins, nitric oxide, prolactin, glutamate, etc. So many of the personality traits of serotonin can be due to elevated glutamate or cortisol, for example, because serotonin potentiates the release of those hormones. So when people are assholes, it's because of all this crud that's going on in their body, right? I mean, that's clear. We see people today who just, they don't care about anything and they're probably falling into this category. But to lower cortisol or glutamate directly will help a bit. It will not fix the condition because serotonin is the root cause of it. And if it's not kept in rein, lowering cortisol or glutamate will not help much. So what are some of these traits of someone that has the high serotonin personality? Maybe we see this a lot. I think this is kind of the modern person. As I read through this list, I mean, you might think to yourself, I know so many assholes like this. And it's a pretty intense list, but allow me to start. Here are some traits common with it. Tiredness or lethargy, easily tired, and even chronic fatigue syndrome due to elevated 5-HT2A receptor. This inhibiting TPH will prevent this fatigue. However, serotonin isn't the only neurotransmitter involved in fatigue, but also cortisol, acetylcholine, noradrenaline, and serotonin, the dopamine ratio, Kernig pathways, etc. So that's one symptom right there, or one trait. Another one is overexcitation. ADD and ADHD, what the medical system calls that, gets distracted easily, anxiety, impulsivity, restlessness, overthinking, rumination, due to elevated 5-HT2A receptor. Rigid thinking or mental inflexibility. Some studies actually say that the activation of 5-HT2A receptor via psychedelics such as LSD, psilocybin, etc., reduce rigid thinking, but this is actually because it stimulates glutamine release, which then stimulates dopamine release via the NMDA receptor, and dopamine is involved in creating in creativity and flexible thinking. Yeah, this is actually true that if someone is serotonin toxic or high, psilocybin can actually lower it. Plus, after psychedelics exposure, people usually feel this kind of bliss for a week or two afterwards, and this is due to 5-HT2A downregulation. Being depressed or sad, feeling down, reduced desire to do other things like go out and have fun, social anxiety, withdrawal, etc. Reduced cognitive function, not necessarily a lack of knowledge, but intuitive thinking. However, they might think they are smart and have all the answers in a very authoritative way. Narcissistic, delusions of grandeur, fantasies about power, exaggerated sense of self-importance requiring constant admiration, etc. Sounds like the Oyves, right? Reduced sense of sensory perception, eudaimonia, apathy, reduced smell, hearing, taste, sensation, euphoria to music. Kind of sounds like some of the OEAI symptoms they're peddling around. Overly analytical with a negative bias. Cynical, negative, doesn't look at the bright side of life. Feeling icky or often just wanting to be left alone. Non-assertive, rather rude and aggressive dominant, which might come over as assertiveness, but is actually totally the opposite. Philosopher Eric Hoffer said, "Rudeness is the weak man's imitation of strength." That sounds about right. OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, activation increases compulsivity and lowers dopamine and noradrenaline. Aversive, a passive-aggressive person, but can also be full-on aggressive and violent. Don't care about the consequences of wrong decisions. This can be due to low dopamine. Place less weight upon the magnitude of bad outcomes. Life feels like a joke or means nothing. Sounds like some of these capricious dindus, right? Anticipation anxiety, enhanced anticipation of and sensitivity to threat-related stimuli, punishment and negative feedback. That sounds what anti-social media does for people. Emotionally unstable. We see a lot of this these days, like a lot of this. Very sensitive to emotional triggers. Feels like you have to walk on eggs or eggshells around the person. Gets easily triggered emotionally due to traumatic experience with someone in the past. Emotional or argumentative about beliefs or views, etc. This is anyone who basically thinks arguing on social media is a good idea or anti-social media. Bullying. This is usually due to trauma early in life of being abused, either mentally or physically themselves, and now they do it to others. We see a lot of this on antisocial media too. Reduced verbal fluency. How often do we see this? It seems like everyone's language is getting exceedingly dumbed down. Reduced verbal fluency in memory, attention, planning ability, and psychomotor performance. However, estrogen and serotonin provide the desire to talk, thus people with high estrogen and serotonin talk a lot. Fearful, scared of losing, low confidence and assertiveness. Futile patience, keep on waiting to receive something even if it's improbable or irrational. And obedient, due to not wanting to rock the boat, scared, zombified, not questioning things, etc. So it seems like this personality can oscillate from being like all out in your face or basically like a shrinking violet. Suicidal thoughts or attempts, delirious, mood swings like bipolar, antagonism of 5T2A, which lowers glutamate and histamine receptor H1, and agonism of 5HT1A receptor, which lowers serotonin, helps. So basically mood swings, bipolar, what they call, you know, personality disorder. Easily agitated, argumentative, violent, aggressive, intermittent explosive disorder. Psychopathic behavior, we see a lot of this today too. And finally, non-likable. It is shown that males find high serotonin females less attractive and act more aggressively towards them. However, high serotonin people do attract others that are similar to them, which also have elevated serotonin. I think we all kind of attract people who are similar to ourselves in certain ways. So that's quite a list. Seems a lot like the modern person who's basically doesn't give a shit, is obsessed with themselves, can't concentrate, can't stand up to themselves, treats other people like shit, and is a psychopath. Yep. And they're recommending that people eat a diet that could possibly exacerbate those symptoms. A little bit more on this article. People with high serotonin will obviously not always have the exact same personality traits, so you might know someone who has some or a lot, but not all. This is because of a difference in receptor expression as well as other hormones, which vary between other humans. But in general, people with high serotonin have low dopamine and are prone to being unstable and negative, making decision and cognitive errors, pessimistic, and have a lot of fake confidence and be overly fake optimistic. We see so much of this on like places like YouTube. Leech on other people's energies, so spiritual vampirism, have the answers to everything, are overly logical as opposed to creative, want people to feel sorry for them, depressed, irritating, truly annoying, passive-aggressive, up-in-your-face aggressive, enjoy picking on people to make themselves look or feel better, think highly of themselves, but deep inside are highly insecure and lash out if any insecurity is exposed. Can't take it to be wrong, etc., etc., etc. To sum it up even shorter, there are mainly two of these personalities. One is that up-in-your-face, aggressive, dominant, not common, assertive, narcissistic, authoritative, controlling. So that's like the more young manifestation, right? And the other one is more of a weak, depressed, anxious, socially isolated, feel sorry for me personality, or a combo of both, the two-faced split personality. That's probably the one you want to deal with the least. And that's more of, I guess, the yin is the weaker one. But wow, crazy. Sounds like a blood sugar imbalance would probably exacerbate this type of condition. But very interesting right there, especially since we've been lied to via the allopathic shitstem that serotonin is this happy hormone, right? This is a hoax, but they'd have to tell us the opposite of what is true in order to get the results that they want, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't get the results that they want. So they always have to tell us the opposite of what is true, just hoping that we will do the opposite. And what are some ways that we can lower serotonin? Here's a list of 60. I don't think I'm going to go through all of them, but these are things I've talked about so many times on the show ad nauseum, but I'll talk about them again. Some of them I've talked about more than others. One of them is to never give up. And you see a lot of this learned helplessness nowadays, especially in this OIDAI age that we're all living in, that we're all part of this general LARP. None of us really want to be part of it, albeit here we are, part of this Oyed AI LARP, and a lot of people are giving up. So giving up is one of the most common signs of high serotonin. When animals were giving something to bite on in a seemingly helpless situation, they didn't develop learned helplessness. Similarly, if you fight back and continue to look for an answer, serotonin is kept at bay. So there we go, never giving up. That's a good sign. Of course, like I said, people these days are always doing the opposite. Number two, the topic of this broadcast, take care of your gut health. So all the things we talked about thus far, eating easy to digest foods, making sure you're pooping enough, healing any issues with gut dysbiosis or intestinal permeability. Gut health is a melange of many different conditions that lead to someone who has all these other things going on. But it's usually a combination deal of, you know, a bad balance of bacteria, holes in the stomach, blood sugar issues. It's so many different things going on. It's never really just one thing. So much people just say, oh yeah, just take probiotics for gut issues. Like, that's not really going to help. That's really just a band-aid that could actually make some people do worse. So there are certain foods and supplements that will actually help to lower serotonin by balancing the homeostasis of the microbes and the bacteria that are in the intestinal tract. And that can be things like monolaurin, which is actually an ingredient in coconut oil. You can buy this as a supplement. It's one that doesn't get a lot of play. Oftentimes all the supplements they talk about don't get a lot of play because they want you to be taking the ones that actually harm. So that's something you can think about right there. Or more easy and more natural would just be to have coconut oil and stuff like that. Raw coconut oil would be best. Not everybody can source raw coconut oil. Just try to do the best that you can. Number three would be to take note of what you eat and your digestion. I keep a food journal. I would suggest if you are having gut issues or any issues, or just not even if you aren't, just to kind of keep a food journal. It's a very helpful tool. I don't use my mobile device to do so. I like to do the old-fashioned food journal. Some people like to track on their phone using an application because they can get an idea of how much they're supposed to be eating. Most people don't eat enough. Oftentimes when you don't eat enough, I find that gut motility can be stunted or halted. So it's best to make sure you're eating enough so you can basically get that blood sugar balance so everything works nicely. So take note of what you eat and your digestion. This is a very good tip. Number four, keep your liver healthy. We talked a little bit about the liver earlier in this broadcast. So it's really important to do this because the liver can get damaged many ways from polyunsaturated fats, alcoholism, heavy metals, excess iron, abusing anabolic steroids, gut issues, and all of these, of course, can lead to an increase in serotonin and an inability to detoxify. So some good foods to eat for liver health would be liver, like cures like, that type of thing. Gelatin is also good, as are foods that are high in K2. K2 is a fat-soluble vitamin. It's oftentimes found in dairy foods and poultry livers and pastured eggs, things like that. Number five, avoiding polyunsaturated fats. We've talked about this so much, but eating a diet high in omega-6, aka polyunsaturated fats, will exert the most potent effect on increasing serotonin. And these oils are everywhere. Every diet is basically just a way to sell these oils and other deleterious things that they tell us are, quote, food. The reason they started promoting these oils is not because they're heart healthy. It's because they were an industrial waste product and they had to market them some way. And they sold us this hoax, this lie that Zogin Savory Ansel Keys promoted called the dietary heart hypothesis, telling us that saturated fat was the cause of heart dis-ease and cancer and diabetes. That was a hollow hoax, but they wanted to make us ill and make us think that we were doing something heart healthy, all in the guise of this. Also, if you look, the consumption of Chicken, especially low quality chicken, has also raised since the promotion of these oils. The promotion of these oils pretty much began back post World War II, and they're still, unfortunately, in many people's diets in large amounts. And of course, there is a huge difference between having a few raw almonds and eating like food, takeaway food that's, you know, fried in soybean oil. But in general, it's good to not take in enough of these. When we eat natural whole foods like eggs and milk and stuff like that, there's already enough polyunsaturated fats in minute amounts in these foods. So we're not going to get like a deficiency of any of this stuff. And omega-3, DHA, fish oil, we've talked about this on many broadcasts in the past, is very serotonergic and increases serotonin. Of course, the allopathic system shitstem promotes omega-3. They promote it in the form of these capsules, and they promote it in the form of people consuming only fatty fish. Omega-3 increases serotonin release, the EPA. There's two different types of those. There's DHA and there's EPA. So this is really something that is not good. You can occasionally eat a little bit of cold water fish or so. That's, you know, not too much of a problem, especially if it is raw, because then you won't be oxidizing any of those highly unstable lipids. So if you are going to eat a small amount of this fish, make sure it's raw and make sure it's wild too. I wouldn't be eating farm salmon, even if it was raw. That's probably not the best look, at least not on the regular. You'll also lower, if you lower your inflammation, you will lower serotonin. So that's something else you can think about it. Making sure you get enough salt and potassium in your diet, another way to go about that. Something else would be optimizing the thyroid. We've talked about the thyroid here and there in the broadcast, but always important, because when you have proper thyroid function as well as proper liver function, that is what is necessary to detox the serotonin. So a few ways to optimize thyroid function would be to go lean on goitrogenic foods. Those would be the cruciferous vegetables, like the cabbages and all of these things, you know, mustard greens, cauliflower. And if you are going to eat these, they should really be cooked very well with a little bit of saturated fat. But I certainly wouldn't eat a heap of these, especially not raw. They can be really hard to digest. Avoid halogens such as fluoride, chlorine, and bromide. We've talked about a little bit of this in the past on different shows. Fluoride can be found in drinking water, toothpaste. Chlorine can be found in swimming pools. And bromide is also found in baked goods, so you want to avoid that. Avoid excess stress. This is something that's harder for some people than others. Don't overwork out. That can also be not good for you. That can raise serotonin. Make sure you eat enough. A caloric deficiency lowers thyroid hormones. So all these people who are promoting all the IF and the fasting, this is not good. And you know, when you see on Google that, you know, the mainstream news, Jews media is promoting ketotic diets, they're promoting vegetableism or veganism, they're promoting fasting, you know it's not good for you. Avoid or eat enough protein, super important. We've talked about this a lot. I might actually do a whole feature on protein on a future show. Make sure you eat a lot of nutritious foods, because you want to get the, you know, your required vitamins and minerals. If you don't, that will lower thyroid hormone production. So very important, these tips right here. Basically just be kind to yourself. This whole culture of beating yourself up and, you know, overtraining and not eating enough. Like, yeah, it's amazing to work out and to feel good, but it's also good to not go too hard and hurt yourself, but you also don't want to go too soft and not put in any effort, but you also want to make sure that you eat. That's important. And we're not talking about overeating, we're talking about eating. So those were about 8 tips right there. There's so many more, but I'm not going to go through the entire list, but those are some, a lot of them is just some supplements and other stuff. I like to focus more on what we can do with food and habits and stuff like that. That's more basic. I think we should always stick to the basic stuff first, because that's an easier way to go about it. It's more simple. Most people can start with food and lifestyle habits, because they do eat and they do have a lifestyle, as opposed to adding X, Y, and Z, which sometimes is a bit daunting for people. All right, so onward to the next topic for the broadcast. We talked a little bit about serotonin right there. We also talked about blood sugar balance and all this other types of stuff. So great. Now, is there anything else that I have that I wanted to talk about for this broadcast? Let me just look at my notes for 1 second. Always want to share as much as I can just to put this information out. It's always important because there's such a lack of good information and sifting through all these platforms or chat forums where they're just censoring like mad. Like I've heard that they're censoring a lot on the library platform and on Odyssey. And of course, we know BitChute is getting tons of censorship. I mean, it really seems like TalmudGram is one of the best places in regards to not being censored, but there's a lot of crud on there too. I make a point of not really following too many things, and I'm not really even immersing myself too much more in this scene. Of course, I'm aware of what's going on. I'm not blind to it. But why stress myself out and immerse myself in the scene when what we really should be doing now is staying busy being white, right? And building ourselves, optimizing ourselves through proper food, proper habits, yoga, all these amazing and great things, as opposed to watching, you know, watching it all happen, watching all this, you know, civilizational dendritis, like I titled that show earlier in the week, watching all of that, like that's probably going to happen regardless. Not that I'm rooting it on because I'm not really an accelerationist, but I mean, wouldn't it be better for us to not get frozen in that moment of seeing that and then just lose kind of our will and raise our serotonin, but think of ways that we can kind of build up and be better, because it looks like this stuff is progressing whether we like it or not. So holding our hands up and saying, no, stop, this is awful, that might take away from our energy and our resistance to this in the long run. Just a thought. All right, so moving on a little bit more with some other information for the broadcast. Are you being controlled by your second brain? Well, maybe you are. I feel like a lot of people are being controlled by their second brain. That would be the gut. And that's why I call this show Gastrointestinal Mind Control. Did you know that your gut can be the angel or the devil on your shoulder? And of course, I know that's a Talmudic reference, but just for the sake of the article. It's all in your head. I mean your gut. Yep, it's back to the gut. We all know the story. The gut is involved in everything. It's got its fingers. I mean, it's endotoxins in every pie. Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, said in 400 BC, death sits in the bowel. He also said the more popular, quote, all dis-ease starts in the gut. So how are you feeling today? Is it possible that is influenced by your gut? You bet it is. So of course we know that they have the gut microbiome like we talked about before. So this is comprised of fungi and parasites, bacteria live inside the gut. There are all these bacteria in there. 95% of them are located in the large intestine. Then we have a mentality-gut connection. So these gut bacteria that we have living in our intestinal tract create all kinds of things that can have an effect on our body. And we talked about this a little bit in the beginning of the show. We talked about things like leaky gut, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Gut bacterial influences memory, mood, and behaviors, things like fear and anger, irritability, and helplessness. Very, very interesting. And they also are relevant due to a range of disorders, including alcoholism, drug abuse, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and restless leg syndrome. Very important because so many people are having these problems, but they keep on being recommended these diets that are actually going to make it worse for them. But that is part of this scam. Of course, there's a connection between depression, anxiety, and the gut. The gut microbes have a very potent influence on one's mental health. And this is very important because these are two of the most common mental conditions that people suffer from. So gut dysbiosis contributes to almost everything wrong with depression and anxiety. For example, leaky gut or intestinal permeability, imbalance in the corticotropin pathways, inflammation, immune reactions, overactive HPA axis, neurotransmitter imbalances, low dopamine, all of these things are caused by gut dysbiosis. So you have all these issues that are caused by the main problem, gut dysbiosis, which is caused by eating the wrong food, being stressed out, and having a lack of homeostasis. People with irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, also experience psychiatric disorders. A recent meta-analysis study showed that anxiety and depression levels are significantly higher in IBS patients versus healthy volunteers, regardless of the IBS subtype. They have all these subtypes of that. Basically, it's just a degeneration going on inside the body that's taking place in the digestive tract. So here we are with all these problems basically being influenced by our food and how we digest things, right? And it seems like functional medicine oftentimes really focuses very heavily on the gut, and no doubt about it, it's important, but oftentimes they are misdirected. They don't understand that serotonin is not the happy hormone. They think that estrogen is a female hormone. So they have so many false premises. They believe in germ or joom theory. So you really can't get anywhere with really a lot of the things that they're saying. But there's a tip here and there that's of merit. And of course, they're always promoting tons of probiotics and probiotic foods. They're promoting foods that are inflammatory and irritating to the gut. And they're oftentimes just like an allopath, because they are allopaths, or just they're just practicing allopathy light, essentially. They will recommend a heap of herbs and supplements, just like an allopath would recommend, you know, a whole catalog of pharmaceutical pills. So you can get how to positively modulate gut bacteria. I don't like to use the expression good gut bacteria. I don't like that whole good and evil thing. I don't want to play into germ theory. So how can you positively modulate the gut bacteria? How can we make ourselves more eugenic, essentially? Avoid gut irritating foods. Those would be a lot of the foods that we already talked about before in the earlier part of the show. Seed foods, foods that are dry. Raw vegetables tend to be very irritating for most people, with the exception of a carrot sometimes. And by vegetables, I'm talking about botanical vegetables. A cucumber is not a vegetable. A cucumber is usually more assimilable and easier for people to digest. Of course, you have to peel it and take the seeds out. So avoid putting stuff in that's irritative. That's number one. Number two would be avoiding harmful food and supplemental additives. We touched on this earlier in the broadcast. Carrageenan, this is in ice cream sometimes, toothpaste, a lot of these tranny foods, guar gum, xanthan gum, silicon dioxide, titanium dioxide. So avoid foods and supplements that have these additives. Avoid an excess of alcohol. A little bit of alcohol can have some merit, but too much is not good for gut bacteria. Alcohol negatively modulates gut bacteria, especially Akkermansia, that's a type of bacteria, and can cause leaky gut, intestinal permeability. Researchers found that the more permeable the intestine, the more likely someone will be dependent on alcohol after relapse after quitting. Interesting. So if there's more of like a Swiss cheese-like effect with holes in the stomach, someone is more likely to, I guess, be dependent on alcohol. Of course, oftentimes there are issues with low B vitamins, and there's many issues for this. Blood sugar, thyroid. Oftentimes there's been stories of people who were given a thyroid supplement and they no longer had any desire to utilize alcohol. Manage stress. Manage work stress, financial stress, family stress, get good sleep, have a good diet, exercises, things like that. Of course, if you're super stressed, doing very intense exercise will probably just stress you out more. So you might want to focus on doing more gentle, restorative, nourishing things, more yin things. Expose yourself to nature, another way to positively modulate the gut bacteria. Even walking down the beach and breathing in the iodine in the air is a healthy habit. Get sunlight. Sunlight increases dopamine, increases vitamin D or vitamin D. Vitamin D helps synthesize gut peptides. Increase your dopamine. Dopamine increases intestinal mucus secretion. Akkermansia, which is a mucus-degrading bacteria, will thrive more, leading to better gut health. So there are many things that you can do to modulate your gut and get it better. Everyone's going to be a little bit different, but the easiest thing you can do besides focusing on all these other things, like all these supplements and lifestyle hacks, is just to avoid eating gut irritating foods, right? It's I know it sounds simple, but oftentimes a lot of us are very hooked on certain foods for whatever reason it may be. It may be comfort, it may be laziness, it may be familiarity, emotions, trauma, palatal enjoyment. It could be a numerous reasons. Oftentimes people tend to be addicted to things that aren't good for them too. So you have to play around with it and find out what works for you. Everyone's going to be a little bit different on this because everyone has a different situation based on their history. Everyone has a different diet, right? We have different loads of toxins and poisons in our body, different loads of vaccinations, different traumas, different stresses, different lifestyles, different hormonal system, different age, different race, different sex. So there are many factors that go into this. I don't really ever think it's a one size fits all type of deal. I think oftentimes people try to sell you that with things like, veganism or vegetableism or any of these other diets, but it's typically more than that, because everyone has their own individual set of context, right? But just to recap, some foods that are easy to digest that are also very nutrient dense and very tasty. Look at that. The stuff that's easy to digest is nutrient dense and tasty and doesn't take too much time to prepare either. I know sometimes, endlessly preparing food. I know from someone who spent most of my life really just cooking, in the kitchen cooking, professionally and personally, it can get a bit monotonous sometimes, or just, doing all the dishes and chopping and everything. So again, to recap, some of those good foods, fruits are good depending on what fruits work for you. You don't want to eat fruit alone. You want to pair it with a protein source and a little bit of fat. That's always the best way to do. Fruit is a good source of carbohydrates as well as minerals. Things like maple syrup and honey. I tend to use a little bit of each. I don't go intense with either of these. Maple syrup, of course, is a cooked product. Honey is a raw product unless you get a cooked honey. You want to make sure it says raw and unheated on the label. That's very important. It's very easy to digest, and it has a combo of fructose and glucose, which is needed for the liver and the brain to function optimally. Other things would be different juices, depending on what juices work for you. Everyone's going to be different with that. But things like orange juice can be good, guava juice, etc. They also have hydration, but they have vitamin C and potassium. Some people don't do well with orange juice, especially if it is cooked or if it has enzyme break. They put this thing in it where they break down the pulp. It's like an enzyme, so you're basically still drinking the pulp, and that may not work for everybody. You could always do fresh squeeze and you can strain it. Organ meats. We've talked a lot about organ meats on the broadcast, but they're very important. One of the most nutrient-dense foods in the market. If you've looked all the time in history when they were pulling out organ meats in the diet, and even some boomers will tell you stories of them eating liver like twice a month or once a week or something like that. But they kept on adding in these, multivitamins or these things on the market once they took the organ meats out of the diet. These basically are the original multivitamin, the original prenatal, containing vitamin A, B, C, D, E, and K2, as well as copper, zinc, and selenium. Many choices, not just liver, also heart, kidney, and thyroid. They can be consumed in many different ways. I just like to eat them raw, so I get the most bioavailable nutrition, and I get it easy to digest, and it takes me no time to cook it. Pasture-raised eggs, another great choice. Easy, affordable protein for many people. They contain vitamin A, D, B12, and choline and leucine. Very important. Always good to make sure you have this with a carbohydrate source, the egg, because the egg is a good source of protein and saturated fat. But you also want to make sure you pair it with something like a carbohydrate, like maybe a couple of steamed beets. Coconut oil is good for metabolism and also is a good source of monolaurin and lauric acid. So that's something that you could use not just for your consumption orally. It could also be used in body products. You can make hair oils and stuff like that with it. grass-fed dairy. We've talked a lot about that on many prior shows. Preferably raw, good source of bioavailable calcium. Having a high calcium to phosphate ratio reduces stress in the body. And most people are the opposite when their calcium to phosphate ratio is to cause chronic inflammation and dis-ease. One of the reasons that that Oy Vey hoaxing carnivore diet is a bunch of crud because it's extremely high in phosphate. And those people are all cooking their meat to death using like a air fryer, which is basically just a microwave that browns. I mean, it's just so gross. These pictures of just overcooked meat. Like, how do people salivate and think that looks appetizing? It looks disgusting. Number 8 is wild-caught shellfish. This includes oysters and mussels and clams, lobster, crab, and scallops. These all have the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, and E, as well as the minerals selenium, zinc, copper, and B12. These are great. I love shellfish. One of my favorite things always has been shellfish. I grew up eating it, so for me, it's something that I have a very comfortable relationship with, but I love eating these things, especially raw oysters. The other ones I usually eat steamed, and I like to dip into some melted butter, or I'll saute them briefly. Bone broth and gelatin. These are good sources of high-quality protein. They also have amino acids that you don't see in the muscle meats. They have ones like glycine, proline, hydroxyproline, and beta-alanine. And finally, sea salt, good for increasing metabolism, decreases things like edema, and is necessary for sugar to be mobilized properly. I recommend a white sea salt, because the pink ones that are very trendy these days, or the ones that are gray, those could have metals, heavy metals like iron and other things that we really don't want to get into our system. So best to get a white salt. So that was a little recap right there of some foods that are exceedingly nutrient dense, succulent, tasty, delicious, luscious, and just happen to be very easy to digest. Because if we eat the right foods that digest smoothly, we wouldn't have to deal with any of this gastrointestinal interference or gastrointestinal mind control. And let's see, we got some comments going on in the chat. Jason is saying, I have noticed as well in my life that too much stress and lack of sleep can cause sickness. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oftentimes, stress is the number one thing that gets people in trouble. Even if you have a good diet, stress can really take a toll on you. And especially if you don't get enough sleep when you're stressed, that's an easy way to feel run down and have the immune system feel like it's in shambles. Maybe you'll be more likely to grab food that's not so good for you. Your digestion can halt. Sometimes when stress affects somebody, their digestion can basically be suspended for 72 hours, which is like 3 days. And that puts a halt on the production of enzymes. And of course, if you're eating foods like PUFAs, which reduce and suppress enzymes anyway, you're going to have a really hard time digesting because you put your body in stress, either from being in stress in the first place or digesting something that was stressful. It's a kind of a what comes first, the chicken or the egg type of situation. Is it the stress or is it the food, or is it the food that caused the stress or the stress that caused the food choice? So it's a constant thing of that thing, the Ouroboros, like the snake chasing its tail. A lot of people are just in that loop for a while, but it takes recognition, intuition, and some type of cognition to comprehend that you've been doing that to yourself. So this is all a tool that we have to hone, and it's something you can do yourself, which is one of the grooviest aspects of it. So I think I'll leave it at that for this broadcast. I am your host, Tabitha. You're listening to White Wellness. This has been Gastrointestinal Mind Control Part 2. Be sure to catch all the wonderful broadcasts over here at the one and only American National Radio Network. I hope everyone is having an awesome Thursday, wherever they are in this world, or if you're listening in the archives, maybe it's not Thursday. But anyway, Sat Nam, everybody.